97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like, whatever, dude.
Hey! Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand.
You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
He set foot in America one fine October day. Sailing into Baltimore, well, everything's okay. He buttons on the jacket, shining like the brand new diamond. Listening in the sunlight, blistering my eyes. When you said that you loved me, I knew it wasn't true. I've 100 unread messages.
Happy 4th of July weekend. Still celebrating? We are. We bought some fireworks on 4th of July that we did not fire off on 4th of July because we watched a presentation ourselves in the Scuda, which was a lot of fun. I do want to talk about Joe Biden. We're not getting away from this. In fact, America's not getting away from this. This might be one of the biggest blowout elections we've ever seen if everything stays the way that it is. Now, this will not be 1984. This will not be that kind of landslide because we are too divided as a nation ideologically for that to happen. So in 1984, when Reagan won that election, I think he won 49 out of 50 states. We were not the same nation then as we are now. But in the modern era, which I don't even know how you would define, but the recent history, we're much more divided. And so you're never going to see that kind of landslide, except in a situation like this. Now, I really don't want to get ahead of myself because there's too much at stake. I know people will get really mad at talk show hosts for saying things publicly like, oh, it could be a landslide, because you don't want to dampen turnout for your side. So you always want to be saying, I know a lot of hosts do this, not necessarily here so much, but across the country, like national hosts will say, No, this is going to be a very, very close election despite polling and despite what they see before their eyes, because they have a tremendous amount of influence and they don't want to dampen turnout because they want to make sure that this thing does happen. I understand that. I really do. But I just don't think there's a whole lot of hope for Democrats right now, being that their nominee is Joe Biden. And the public mainstream narrative is he's not fit for office. I mean, the party is telling him he's not fit for office. So unless Joe Biden steps down, he's going to be the nominee. I don't think he's going to step down. So we're going to spend the next probably month and a half with the narrative being the man currently as president and currently as candidate for the Democrats is not capable of having that office from Democrats. That is not recoverable. You can't come back from that. So what does a landslide look like? Again, people are probably mad at me, shaking their fists at me for even saying this right now. I'm sorry. I'm going to say it anyway. What does a landslide look like in 2024? Well, it would look like states like Minnesota and Virginia and maybe New Hampshire going red. It doesn't mean that you're going to have 49 states. It just means that you're going to have a decisive win if everything stays the way it is. Now, that's if Joe Biden stays as the candidate. If he doesn't, things could get shaken up quite a bit, and I don't know what will happen. I could speculate, but I don't think that that's going to happen. There's just too much that would have to happen to remove him as the candidate. Mainly, he would have to step down. So that's how we start the show today. Hello. I figure I should probably get that off of my chest before we get into the rest of the show. A little bit of a tease as to what we have here. This segment will be a little bit shorter just so we can get into some other stuff. But I have a whole bunch of clips that I want to play from earlier in the week, like Monday, I think, is really when we had most of these clips, maybe Tuesday, of the Supreme Court ruling, which happened last Friday, so not July 5th, but the Friday before that. People kind of reacted all weekend, and then we got into it Monday and Tuesday, of talking about the Supreme Court immunity ruling. I have some issues with it that I think most people don't. And I think Democrats, here's the nice thing about banter. You know, the debate back and forth, the national debate, free speech, is supposed to produce things like this, where if there are problems with something, people will point out those problems, and then you can debate whether they're real or not. A lot of times I think the debate that we have is phony, like when people say in the mainstream media or the White House or whoever, Joe Biden does not have dementia. That's a right-wing talking point. Well, freedom of speech would dictate that we get to come on and we get to talk about that and prove it to be false. And then you get to see eventually with your own two eyes and your own two ears what exactly a person without dementia looks like debating Donald Trump. Apparently that's it. So it's nice to be able to still have all this free speech and dissent and we can talk back and forth. But I'm teasing this because I want you to stick around and we'll talk about it. I think Democrats, and even like the kooky Democrats, the Keith Olbermans and the paid operatives, not that he is one, but there are others who have echoed the same sentiment, that this Supreme Court ruling opens up a new can of worms, that a president could do any crazy old thing like assassinate people as official acts of the presidency and be immune from prosecution. They've brought that up, and I got to tell you, I think that needs to be discussed in greater detail. I think we've kind of glossed over that argument, and I think there's something to that argument. Let's talk about it. Stick around. It's next. Oh, followed by, I said we're teasing here, a little bit of a random thing that we're going to do kind of in the third segment of our hour here, which Wiggins America is now by choice for a little while. It's going to be an hour. We're going to have on this is so weird and it's such a departure from what we normally do, but I have some LA friends who are in the streaming and TV business, and they contacted me and said, hey, we're promoting a new show. Would you be interested in having the host of that show on? And I said, well, what is it? And they said, well, it's a reality TV show about influencers doing brand promotions. And I was like, it doesn't really fit here. No, not really. They said, well, the brands, though, are candy. And I was like, done. So we're going to talk to Bethany Mota about pretty much candy, but a little bit about the TV industry, I think, is probably what we'll get into more than anything. But I took it because it's like, it's a show based on just candy. And I'm like, okay, you sold me. So that'll be in this hour, too. Stick around. More Wiggins America.
Bull and proxies. And they all had the same thing to say about President Biden, which is he is sharp as a tack.
Sharp as a tack?
Which end of the tack? The round part?
This is a man who is sharp.
This is a very sharp president.
And the people that I've talked to say he's as sharp as a tack. He's fine.
They say he's sharp.
He was sharp.
He's sharp as a tack.
If I asked 100 people on the street, what do you think of Elon Musk? You'd have 100 different statements. There'd be a general theme, but you would not have even 50 people repeat the exact same words. And so you have this funny situation where 100 different people were basically saying the exact same talking point. So it's not even a point of view. It was just something that they were told to say by somebody else. And that, to your point, Sachs, is the real issue, which is that you don't really have an honest media here. And so there is no check and balance on power right now.
That's from, I don't know what that is. It's from a podcast called All In or something like that. Elon Musk reposted it, so I thought I would repost it as well because I thought it was a really good point. It is not necessarily the subject of this segment, though. As I mentioned in the last segment, I wanted to talk about the presidential immunity ruling. I think there's a lot to discuss here. The reason is that we tend to go to our corners when we hear something that conservatives like. I do this too. I'm not saying like it's bad. It's just this is what we tend to do. If we hear something that our side generally is like, yay, that was good, we go, oh, okay, I think that we won a battle there. Then if you hear that our side is upset by it, you go, oh, we may have lost a battle there, you know? And it kind of informs at least the way you're approaching an issue, especially when it comes to Supreme Court, because there's a lot of cases that are clear-cut that seem like, well, you know where you would want to land on, and other ones that you're like, I don't really know exactly what this means. So this kind of stuff matters when people start putting the cases into context. The presidential immunity one immediately went into context where our side, the right side, was saying, yes, this is a huge victory for us and for the Constitution. And the left side was saying, no, this is a huge loss for everybody, including us, and including, I mean, they wouldn't say the Constitution, but they would say certainly that it's a win for Donald Trump, and that means it's a loss for the country, right? That's pretty much how they frame everything. So I started looking at this issue myself to try to decide, well, what do I think about it? Because I'm a radio host. We talk politics. I don't want to just believe whatever everybody says. And I had some reservations about jumping full in on this. I don't know why. I just did. I said, I need to check and make sure this is something I actually do agree with. Now, after having done that, I do think that the Supreme Court got this decision about as right as they could. The problem with this decision is that it had to be a decision, right? I think that that's where I've kind of backstepped a little bit and said, what is the big view here? Because you get so close to it, you go, I got to try to magic eye this thing. You step away a little bit, you start to get the picture. I think that the problem is that it was a case at all, okay? It shouldn't have been. Here is some of the left's reaction to this, just to give you some context. And I'll tell you really where they took this, because this is like the mainstream reaction. But the super progressive wing lost their minds over this. And I want to address that.
Yeah, look, I think Supreme Court is really hurting itself here. I mean, I think most Americans on either side would have preferred us getting some kind of finality around these cases. And what you see is the Supreme Court just dragging this out and dragging this out. They could have weighed in on all this stuff back in March and cleared the decks on this one way or the other. They didn't. They say, go through the whole process and you come back up here. Then they wait 60 plus days past the buzzer to give us this decision. The way it's structured, this thing's going to ping pong back and forth for 3 or 4 more years, maybe. It seems like they're doing Donald Trump a favor when they don't have to.
See, that's ridiculous because they shouldn't have had to take this case on at all. Van Jones there on, I think it's CNN, where he's talking about, well, this is the Supreme Court doing Donald Trump a favor. No, this is the Supreme Court having to rule on a case, back to my original point, that they didn't want to have to rule on anyway, but has become a case because Democrats have prosecuted the former president of the United States, and they've never done that before. Here's Trey Gowdy.
Our Constitution is majestically vague about what presidential powers. We know the president has the pardon power, but honestly, Commander-in-Chief, what other powers are there? So you have express, you have implied, and then you have this word penumbra. What's in the shadows of those express powers? That can only be fleshed out in litigation. The Supreme Court doesn't handle litigation. So if he wants to proceed on what is unequivocally a private act, he's welcome, I guess, to proceed without prosecution, but that's still going to take time to assert that it is unequivocally private. This is not a win for Jack Smith.
Trey Gowdy essentially saying, at least in thesis, what I've been saying, which is that this should not have been a case. It is something that is not specifically addressed in the Constitution, and now for 250 years, we haven't had to address it until Democrats overstepped the line. Maybe I'm reading a little bit into what Trey Gowdy said, but that's what I take away from it, and that's why I'm here, is to share my opinion. Now, let me address what the super progressives were saying, the Harry Sissons, the Keith Olbermans. Now, some of these are paid, or at least we assume they are paid by the Democrat Party. Not necessarily Keith Olbermann, but he's way, way far left and very extreme and outspoken, right? What they said and others echoed is that, oh, okay, so the president has complete immunity from criminal prosecution. So why don't you just send, why doesn't Biden right now send SEAL Team 6 into Mar-a-Lago and assassinate Donald Trump? He can't be tried for it. Well, that's a crazy assertion. And when I've heard on my side of the aisle talking about that ridiculous proposition, they've basically hand-waved it and said, that's ridiculous. they're right. It is ridiculous. That's not going to happen. Or is it? I think we're in such perilous times that you hope that, I don't think Joe Biden's capable of doing that, but what they're afraid of is that Donald Trump will be capable and will do that. Okay, that's why they're so worried about it. But why? So I hear that, and when I hear arguments against it be kind of like, oh, whatever, it makes my radar go off to say, wait a minute now. You just kind of waved that off. I would like you to address that issue better. If it's that ridiculous, say it's ridiculous and tell me why. Because if it's not, maybe that is an issue. I mean, maybe we are in a place where, oh, shoot, did we just cross the Rubicon here? And now presidents can do anything they want in the act of presidency and be completely immune from it? I mean, I wanted that question answered. So if somebody's going to bring up a debate point like that, especially even if it's on the far left, I'm like, well, then let's talk about it. So it's been a week, and I've gotten to really digest this and read a lot about this. And essentially, if you're interested to know where I've come to, is first of all, it shouldn't have been a case at all. That's Democrats' fault. But now that it is a case, okay, now what do you do with it? Well, I think the Supreme Court got it just about as right as they could, because presidents do need immunity from official acts. That was the argument of the conservatives here, or of the Trump attorneys, saying that Barack Obama, for instance, has killed innocent Americans using drones to try to take out terrorists in his presidency. This is the example it's always given. Should we now be able to prosecute him for killing an innocent American because he did that? Well, the answer is no. The Supreme Court has ruled, no, you can't just do that. It was an official act of president. Therefore, you can't prosecute the guy. But what about that extreme argument? Well, here's the question, and here's where it all comes down to. What has prevented presidents for 250 years of America from doing that up until now? It hasn't been the threat of prosecution after they've been out of office, has it? Because that's never happened. If they were worried about that happening, it would have already happened. And that would have been the check and balance on the president from not doing something ridiculous like that. But it hasn't been. It's been politics. It's been that they could get impeached. It's been that they could get unelected, if they're up for election again. It's been politics, not prosecution. The Democrats have made it prosecution. This is Wiggins America. I've got celebrity lifestyle influencer Bethany Mota on the phone. Bethany, how does it feel to be referred to in press kits as celebrity lifestyle influencer?
Kind of crazy, I guess. Yeah, I never really intended on that title when I got into everything. So
yeah. Well, that's what the press people have deemed you now. So that's what I guess we have to refer to you as, celebrity lifestyle influencer Bethany Mota. So if you're asking, why is she on Wiggins America? Well, you might know that on this show, I am what you would call a candy freak. I talk about candy all the time because I'm probably addicted to it, and I'm probably headed toward diabetes. But regardless, I love it, and I'm not giving it up. And Bethany is the host of a brand new show on Crackle called Follow Me. So, Bethany, explain the tie between Follow Me and candy. How do all these things work together?
Yeah, so Follow Me is a 10-episode competition series. So the whole premise of it is we're basically following 10 different content creators, and they all have been in social media for a little bit now. They all have kind of created their own little communities. They have their own followings, and they're all competing for $50,000. And in this competition, it's sponsored by Mars Wrigley. So they get to work with, like, Snickers, Skittles, M&M's, all these different candy brands to participate in these challenges that are also a part of the show, where they're given a challenge by the brand to create basically a kind of mini commercial for the brand that also highlights the creator and who they are. And they compete in these little mini challenges that are hosted by the brands as well. So it's a very cool influencer content creator show if you're ever interested in the inner workings of that world.
Bethany, this actually sounds like a dream job to me because I'm sure there are lots of different brands that come to people. I mean, we have lots of endorsements here too, of course. And you kind of pick and choose who you like, you know, because there are certain companies that you're like, I've heard bad things about you as a real estate agent or whatever. So you get to pick and choose. To me, this is one that if anybody from Mars Wrigley ever came to me, I would be like, you know what? I'll just do it for the food. You don't even have to pay me. So did you guys get to really like indulge on this show?
Oh, that was my own personal challenge being the host. Every time that I would walk on set, we would work with, you know, a different brand, different candy brand every week. And so it would be everywhere. And so it was a constant challenge of my willpower to not just pick up a piece and eat it throughout the day, especially at like 9 a.m.
Bethany, walk us through a couple episodes here so people can know, you're like, oh, if I choose to dive in to follow me on Crackle, what's an episode? Like, do you focus on just Starburst in one of them? Is that how it works?
Yeah, so each episode of Follow Me, we have a different brand come in and host these kind of mini challenges. So, for example, if Skittles came in, they would challenge our creators. Oftentimes, they'll be put into groups, so we might have someone who does makeup and someone who does fitness on the same team that have to create a video for Skittles. And if they win that one challenge, they could win $1,000. And it's really cool to see how they kind of, you know, take their own creative twist on creating basically a little promo for Skittles or for whatever brand is in that week. And we also have guest mentors come in that judge that challenge. So this season we had like Jordan Jones, we had Kika Kim. They would basically come in and choose whichever video kind of resonates with them the most and that they think is the winner that week.
Bethany Mota is on the phone with us. So, Bethany, obviously, we're in more traditional broadcast media. You're in new media. It just has me curious as to how your world works. Like, you have so many. You're obviously very, very successful. I think you have like 9 million followers on various platforms, maybe more than that. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. I don't want to undersell you here. But do people just come to you all the time as an influencer and say, oh, I want to know you. I just want to promote my brand. I want you to promote my channel. Like, are people knocking on your door all the time?
Yeah, I think ever since starting social media, you know, I never really planned for it to be a brand. And once you get into social media, even now, you could start an account today. And if you blow up tomorrow, then yeah, brands eventually come wherever there are numbers. But I think for me, what I found to be really cool is kind of like you mentioned, is you still kind of have the free will to choose who you want to work with. And I'm really grateful that I've had the opportunity to have that choice. And, you know, there's been so many brands that have come to me that are like dream come true, you know, people that I loved or brands that I grew up wearing or supporting, and to be able to choose to work with them and them to choose to work with me is really exciting.
It's got to be a lot of self-discipline in what you do, because for us, I know that we got to show up at a certain time every single day. We're on the air. That's the way it is. But there's nobody telling you, okay, you have to make a new, you have to do another post today. So it's almost like you have to tell yourself and set your own schedule for that stuff, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there have definitely been times throughout my, you know, social media career, because I've been doing it for over 10 years. I've had a team at certain points, which I think when you have a team that you're paying to be there, you obviously are like, okay, I got to show up. But I've also had majority of my career, I haven't had a team on the content side. So it definitely is, you know, it requires that self-discipline. And I think it ultimately comes down to drive or, you know, feeling a purpose in doing it. Like, what's my reason for making content? Is it, you know, just to make money? And that's cool too. Or is there like kind of a deeper thing driving that I feel ultimately keeps someone going for a longer time?
Absolutely. Bethany Mota, before we run out of time now, knowing that you know, become famous basically in the social world, then transitioning to a more traditional, I mean, streaming isn't exactly traditional, but it's TV. Transitioning to doing a 45-minute episode, it's got to be a little different than just, you know, talk to camera. Now you're doing, you know, a major streaming network show called Follow Me, which is what we're talking to you about. Like, was it a weird transition? Was it natural for you?
I will say it definitely felt crazy, like coming to set and not having to set up the lights or like set up the camera. Obviously, everything done on this show is way a much bigger scale than I would do on like my YouTube channel or my Instagram. But that part of it, I think, is always so weird to come into set and just, oh, get my hair and makeup done and, you know, kind of read the talking points for that day and what the episode is about and kind of fill myself in on all of that and not have to put on all of the other hats. It's weird, but also it's kind of nice.
Yeah, I bet. Because, I mean, full disclosure, in radio, we don't have hair and makeup people either. So we just come in sometimes in our pajamas and we'll tell you we're in full suits and you don't know any difference. Bethany.
Oh, that's so nice.
Bethany, thank you so much for your time. And, of course, the show is Follow Me on Crackle. It's just been there for, it's brand new, a couple weeks it's been out. Check it out and let me know what you think at Radio Wiggins. This is Wiggins America. I've got celebrity lifestyle influencer Bethany Mota on the phone. Bethany, how does it feel to be referred to in press kits as celebrity lifestyle influencer?
Kind of crazy. I guess, yeah, I never really intended on that title when I got into everything. So.
Yeah, well, that's what the press people have deemed you now. So that's what I guess we have to refer to you as, celebrity lifestyle influencer Bethany Mota. So if you're asking, why is she on Wiggins America? Well, you might know that on this show, I am what you would call a candy freak. I talk about candy all the time because I'm probably addicted to it and I'm probably headed toward diabetes. But regardless, I love it and I'm not giving it up. And Bethany is the host of a brand new show on Crackle called Follow Me. So Bethany, explain the tie between Follow Me and candy. How do all these things work together?
Yeah, so Follow Me is a 10-episode competition series. So the whole premise of it is we're basically following 10 different content creators, and they all have been in social media for a little bit now. They all have kind of created their own little communities. They have their own followings, and they're all competing for $50,000. And in this competition, it's sponsored by Mars Wrigley. So they get to work with, like, Snickers, Skittles, M&M's, all these different candy brands to participate in these challenges that are also a part of the show, where they're given a challenge by the brand to create basically a kind of mini commercial for the brand that also highlights the creator and who they are. And they compete in these little mini challenges that are hosted by the brands as well. So it's a very cool influencer content creator show if you're ever interested in the inner workings of that world.
Bethany, this actually sounds like a dream job to me because I'm sure there are lots of different brands that come to people. I mean, we have lots of endorsements here too, of course, and you kind of pick and choose who you like, you know, because there are certain companies that you're like, I've heard bad things about you as a real estate agent or whatever, so you get to pick and choose. To me, this is one that if anybody from Mars Wrigley ever came to me, I would be like, you know what, I'll just do it for the food. You don't even have to pay me. So did you guys get to really like indulge on this show?
Oh, that was my own personal challenge being the host. Every time that I would walk on set, we would work with, you know, a different brand, different candy brand every week. And so it would be everywhere. And so it was a constant challenge of my willpower to not just pick up a piece and eat it throughout the day, especially at like 9 a.m.
Bethany, walk us through a couple episodes here so people can know, you're like, oh, if I choose to dive in to Follow Me on Crackle, what's an episode? Like, do you focus on just Starburst in one of them? Is that how it works?
Yeah, so each episode of Follow Me, we have a different brand come in and host these kind of mini challenges. So, for example, if Skittles came in, they would challenge our creators. Oftentimes, they'll be put into groups, so we might have someone who does makeup and someone who does fitness on the same team that have to create a video for Skittles. And if they win that one challenge, they could win $1,000. And it's really cool to see how they kind of you know, take their own creative twist on creating basically a little promo for Skittles or for whatever brand is in that week. And we also have guest mentors come in that judge that challenge. So this season we had like Jordan Jones, we had Kika Kim. They would basically come in and choose whichever video kind of resonates with them the most and that they think is the winner that week.
Bethany Mota is on the phone with us. So, Bethany, obviously, we're in more traditional broadcast media. You're in new media. It just has me curious as to how your world works. Like, you have so many. You're obviously very, very successful. I think you have, like, 9 million followers on various platforms. Maybe more than that. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. I don't want to undersell you here. But do people just come to you all the time as an influencer and say, oh, I want to know you. I just want to promote my brand. I want you to promote my channel. Like, are people knocking on your door all the time?
Yeah, I think ever since starting social media, you know, I never really planned for it to be a brand. And once you get into social media, even now, you could start an account today. And if you blow up tomorrow, then yeah, brands eventually come wherever there are numbers. But I think for me, what I found to be really cool is kind of like you mentioned, is you still kind of have the free will to choose who you want to work with. And I'm really grateful that I've had the opportunity to have that choice. And, you know, there's been so many brands that have come to me that are like dream come true, you know, people that I loved or brands that I grew up wearing or supporting, and to be able to choose to work with them and them to choose to work with me is really exciting.
It's got to be a lot of self-discipline in what you do. Because for us, I know that we got to show up at a certain time every single day. We're on the air. That's the way it is. But there's nobody telling you, okay, you have to make a new, you have to do another post today. So it's almost like you have to tell yourself and set your own schedule for that stuff, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there have definitely been times throughout my, you know, social media career, because I've been doing it for over 10 years. I've had a team at certain points, which I think when you have a team that you're paying to be there, you obviously are like, okay, I got to show up. But I've also had majority of my career, I haven't had a team on the content side. So it definitely is, you know, it requires that self-discipline. And I think it ultimately comes down to drive or, you know, feeling a purpose in doing it. Like, what's my reason for making content? Is it, you know, just to make money? And that's cool too. Or is there like kind of a deeper thing driving that I feel ultimately keeps someone going for a longer time?
Absolutely. Bethany Mota, before we run out of time now, knowing that you know, become famous basically in the social world, then transitioning to a more traditional, I mean, streaming isn't exactly traditional, but it's TV. Transitioning to doing a 45-minute episode, it's got to be a little different than just, you know, talk to camera. Now you're doing, you know, a major streaming network show called Follow Me, which is what we're talking to you about. Like, was it a weird transition? Was it natural for you?
I will say it definitely felt crazy, like coming to set and not having to set up the lights or like set up the camera. Obviously, everything done on this show is way a much bigger scale than I would do on like my YouTube channel or my Instagram. But that part of it, I think, is always so weird to come into set and just, oh, get my hair and makeup done and, you know, kind of read the talking points for that day and what the episode is about and kind of fill myself in on all of that and not have to put on all of the other hats. It's weird, but also it's kind of nice.
Yeah, I bet. Because, I mean, full disclosure, in radio, we don't have hair and makeup people either. So we just come in sometimes in our pajamas and we'll tell you we're in full suits and you don't know any difference. Bethany.
Oh, that's so nice.
Bethany, thank you so much for your time. And, of course, the show is Follow Me on Crackle. It's just been there for, it's brand new, a couple weeks it's been out. Check it out and let me know what you think at Radio Wiggins on Twitter. Bethany, appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Here we go, Old Roy, 5 sleeper issues that could upend the 2024 campaign. I want to know if you agree with these. Number one, student loan forgiveness. He faces Biden. Historically high disapproval ratings and severe political backlash for his handling of the economy, border, and U.S. foreign policy. He also seems unpopular with younger voters. So do you think student loan forgiveness could change anything.
I don't think so, because I think they've sort of created this, helped to create this generation of entitled youth who, I'll take the free stuff, but I'm not giving you anything back for it. It's not like you can buy the vote anymore, because they're not that engaged, but they'll take whatever you're given. So I think a lot of people will be, hey, cool, pay off my loans. And then here comes election day. They're going to be too busy or not want to bother.
What have you done for me lately?
Yeah, right.
Boy, that's a good point. I did not think about that. The entitlement has sort of backfired.
Yeah.
Like, well, you owe me this.
Yeah.
You didn't just earn my vote. This is something you should have been done a long time ago, and now I'm mad at you for not doing it.
Yeah, right.
Next one is Social Security and Medicare. Now, if this becomes an issue, because Democrats always try to make this an issue, they try to say that Republicans are going to take these things away. Well, facts being, if just in case you care about the facts, whenever anybody, it's usually a Republican, steps up to take on this issue, they are walking into political landmines, first of all, because they know the minute they mention the word Social Security or Medicare, they're going to be accused of taking them away, when in fact, the only reason to bring it up right now is that you're trying to save it.
Right.
Because if you're going to do anything to those programs, you're killing yourself politically. So the only reason to do it is just out of a good-hearted nature to want to actually save those things because they're becoming insolvent. But my question for you is, based on this article, could Social Security and Medicare be an election issue that changes things in a way that we weren't expecting?
I would say this one is the same way, where this is backfiring on them, because Obamacare has made the average person's health insurance just terrible. And so when people had good health insurance through their employer or whatever, they were happy with it. This was something that they thought about, that when I get older and I don't have the job, I don't want to have nothing and get sick as an old person. I think people are now becoming accustomed to crappy health care or insurance, and so they don't think about, I have something good and my only safety net is this government plan. We're now all conditioned to be, well, we currently have the government plan and it sucks, so why do I even care about what they're going to do later?
Well, that's Obamacare. That's not necessarily Medicare and Social Security. So my take on this is that it could be an issue, but it probably won't, because nobody's going to mention it at all between now and November.
Right. Well, and it again, I think a lot of people don't really break it down to they think it's a government program, and government programs, they have shown us time and time again, usually suck. So saving it, whether it's Obamacare or Medicaid or Medicare or Social Security, nobody cares about anymore anyway, because we don't get out of it what we pay into it.
Yeah.
So most people are like, screw that. I'd just soon not pay into it if I had the choice. So I think my point is that I think it's another thing where bad policy is conditioning people to not be as reliant.
Third one, cost of housing. Do you think that is going to be an issue going into the election?
That one I do think will be, because there's stuff out today. I was reading an article on home building and costs of rent and everything else going up. If someone can say, I can get your rent down, I can make homes easier to afford, I think that will hold sway.
You know, I have heard Biden actually mention this, because they know it's an issue, and he didn't say the wrong thing. I don't know that I trust the implementation of it. I don't think that they'll be able to really do much anyway, but he did say that they need more new construction. He did not say the reason that they need more new construction and the reason that new construction costs so much is because of regulations.
Right.
It's
and inflation.
And inflation, right, mm-hmm. of course. Yeah, the last I've heard, and I've mentioned this before, is the last I've heard was something like 2018. So since then, a lot's changed.
Mm-hmm.
That the average new house, just to meet like quality control and safety regulations, was about $80,000 to $90,000 just off the top. So you're starting there.
Yeah.
So you're not built. You can't build a starter home because you're starting at $90,000, and that's break even cost mm-hmm. before you really even get into it. That's why all new homes at that time they were all in the 300s. Now that's probably all new homes are in the 400 or 500s
mm-hmm.
minimum because of inflation. And but nobody's addressing, now Trump is.
Yeah.
He's addressing that it's regulation. And we can go back and forth on regulations all you want. There are some regulations that you're like, well, yeah, I don't want houses to like burn easier. But at the same time, every single regulation that you add costs more money. And so you're paying for it.
Right.
So you can want all the safety regulations you want, you have, and you probably do want a lot of them. But you may not want everything that the government has put on home builders because ultimately it's coming out of your pocket.
Right.
So that's where we are with that. And I do think that is a campaign issue.
Mm-hmm.
People are struggling to not only pay rent, but to buy a house, new home buyers. Man, if you weren't in the market already, if you had already bought a house pre-2020, you kind of can weather this because you're already in.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just getting in, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Number four, Democrats' appalling record of anti-Catholicism. Didn't see this one coming.
No.
I read the article ahead of time, but this one was surprising to me.
That's going to be a regional issue. But you're playing to people who are already pretty solid on Trump's side anyway.
You think?
Well, I mean, there's liberal Catholics out there that they're not going to be swayed by Democrats because I the ones that I know who are more liberal Catholics are all in for the Democrats anyway. And so they have a way of justifying or rationalizing, okay, well, this one thing happened. Well, that's an isolated incident. And they're probably against the thing within Catholicism that, you know, like take the abortion stuff. If there are Catholics who are pro-abortion or pro-LGB, whatever, you know, they already think that Catholicism is on the wrong side of history with those things anyway. And so I don't think it's going to sway because I think you're there. You're already there.
Yeah, nothing's moving.
Nothing's going to move.
Yeah. I saved this article for you because you are Catholic. This actually comes from AMAC, which is something like American something Association of Catholics.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. Last one. Title IX overhaul and the left's gender ideology crusade. Do you think that plays into the 2024 election?
I think it does because they've pushed it too far. And I think, oddly enough, Bill Maher talks about this a lot lately, especially how he considers himself a traditional liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And he even acknowledges that they've gone too far because now you're going to take people who would have been interested in having a conversation. They're just like, no, now you've gone too far. Talking about kids, you blew it. Talking about pushing these things down everybody's throat, it's too much. I think that, more than anything else on that list, will actually change people's votes.
Yeah, economy would be number one to me. And then polling suggests that immigration is way up there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm a little surprised that that's always I get that it's a huge issue. I'm surprised that it always polls so high as something that people are voting on. But yeah, gender ideology is a big one because it really speaks to the core of who you are, what you believe,
mm-hmm.
much more than just politics. And that's where I think you do see a lot of, and I hate referring to minorities as voting blocks because they're not, but when you poll, you know, certain, you know, skin colors and ideologies and things, you do see movement toward Republicans. And I think it's not just economic. I think it's these social issues that they're finally saying, look, enough is enough. I can't vote just because you're calling me Latinx. Like, you're not being more inclusive to me. I don't even do that. So what you're showing to me is that you don't understand me. Like, these social issues matter tremendously as far as basic ideology on life, much more than even politics.
What I think is happening, and we'll see if this plays out, but people are less moving toward Republican or even conservative, is that they see a need to create a new center. Because the left has shifted so far left, there's a big gap now where the center used to be, and people aren't ready to go full, and I don't blame them. You know, I almost cringe calling myself a Republican these days, but I think they are moving more conservative. From the standpoint of, this is too far.
Or at least they're saying, I'm staying here. Yeah. I'm not moving. I see the direction you're going. I'm not going with you.
Yeah, right.
James Carville, you mentioned Bill Maher. James Carville was the one I was going to quote on our way out of this segment, that he says the same thing about these gender things. He's like, look, Democrats, why? Like, why are you making this so central? And it's because it's not traditional Democrats that are making it central. It's the way progressives that are doing it. But the center Democrats have let the progressives run the party.
Yeah.
And so they kind of just have to go, well, that's where you're headed. I guess that's where we're going.
Right.
And they're just not doing anything about it. So, yeah, I think that's a pretty good list.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Here we go. Old Roy, 5 sleeper issues that could upend the 2024 campaign. I want to know if you agree with these. Number one, student loan forgiveness. He faces Biden. Historically high disapproval ratings and severe political backlash for his handling of the economy, border, and U.S. foreign policy. He also seems unpopular with younger voters. So do you think student loan forgiveness could change anything?
I don't think so, because I think they've sort of created this, helped to create this generation of entitled youth who, I'll take the free stuff, but I'm not giving you anything back for it. It's not like you can buy the vote anymore, because they're not that engaged. But they'll take whatever you're given. So I think a lot of people will be, hey, cool, pay off my loans. And then here comes election day. They're going to be too busy or not want to bother.
What have you done for me lately?
Yeah, right.
Boy, that's a good point. I did not think about that. The entitlement has sort of backfired.
Yeah.
They're like, well, you owe me this.
Yeah.
You didn't just earn my vote. This is something you should have been done a long time ago, and now I'm mad at you for not doing it.
Yeah, right.
Next one is Social Security and Medicare. Now, if this becomes an issue, because Democrats always try to make this an issue, they try to say that Republicans are going to take these things away. Well, facts being, if just in case you care about the facts, whenever anybody, it's usually a Republican, steps up to take on this issue, they are walking into political landmines, first of all, because they know the minute they mention the word Social Security or Medicare, they're going to be accused of taking them away, when in fact, the only reason to bring it up right now is that you're trying to save it.
Right.
Because if you're going to do anything to those programs, you're killing yourself politically. So the only reason to do it is just out of a good-hearted nature to want to actually save those things, because they're becoming insolvent. But my question for you is, based on this article, could Social Security and Medicare be an election issue that changes things in a way that we weren't expecting?
I would say this one is the same way, where this is backfiring on them, because Obamacare has made the average person's health insurance just terrible. And so when people had good health insurance through their employer or whatever, they were happy with it. This was something that they thought about, that when I get older and I don't have the job, I don't want to have nothing and get sick as an old person. I think people are now becoming accustomed to crappy health care or insurance, and so they don't think about, I have something good, and my only safety net is this government plan. We're now all conditioned to be, well, we currently have the government plan, and it sucks, so why do I even care about what they're going to do later?
Well, that's Obamacare. That's not necessarily Medicare and Social Security. So my take on this is that it could be an issue, but it probably won't, because nobody's going to mention it at all between now and November.
Right. Well, and it again, I think a lot of people don't really break it down to they think it's a government program, and government programs, they have shown us time and time again, usually suck. So saving it, whether it's Obamacare or Medicaid or Medicare or Social Security, nobody cares about anymore anyway, because we don't get out of it what we pay into it.
Yeah.
So most people are like, screw that. I'd just soon not pay into it if I had the choice. So I think my point is that I think it's another thing where bad policy is conditioning people to not be as reliant.
Third one, cost of housing. Do you think that is going to be an issue going into the election?
That one I do think will be, because there's stuff out today. I was reading an article on home building and costs of rent and everything else going up. If someone can say, I can get your rent down, I can make homes easier to afford, I think that will hold sway.
You know, I have heard Biden actually mention this, because they know it's an issue, and he didn't say the wrong thing. I don't know that I trust the implementation of it. I don't think that they'll be able to really do much anyway, but he did say that they need more new construction. He did not say the reason that they need more new construction and the reason that new construction costs so much is because of regulations.
Right.
It's
And inflation.
Right, mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah, the last I've heard, and I've mentioned this before, is the last I've heard was something like 2018. So since then, a lot's changed.
Mm-hmm.
That the average new house, just to meet like quality control and safety regulations, was about $80,000 to $90,000 just off the top. So you're starting there.
Yeah.
So you're not built. You can't build a starter home because you're starting at $90,000, and that's break even cost, mm-hmm, before you really even get into it. That's why all new homes at that time, they were all in the 300s. Now that's probably all new homes are in the 400 or 500s,
mm-hmm,
minimum, because of inflation. But nobody's addressing. Now Trump is.
Yeah.
He's addressing that it's regulation, and we can go back and forth on regulations all you want. There are some regulations that you're like, well, yeah, I don't want houses to like burn easier, but at the same time, every single regulation that you add costs more money, and so you're paying for it.
Right.
So you can want all the safety regulations you want, you have, and you probably do want a lot of them, but you may not want everything that the government has put on home builders, because ultimately it's coming out of your pocket.
Right.
So that's where we are with that, and I do think that is a campaign issue.
Mm-hmm.
People are struggling to not only pay rent, but to buy a house. New home buyers, man, if you weren't in the market already, if you had already bought a house pre-2020, you kind of can weather this because you're already in.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just getting in, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Number four, Democrats' appalling record of anti-Catholicism. Didn't see this one coming.
No.
I read the article ahead of time, but this one was surprising to me.
That's going to be a regional issue. I think it, but you're playing to people who are already pretty solid on Trump's side anyway.
You think?
Well, I mean, there's liberal Catholics out there that they're not going to be swayed by Democrats, because I the ones that I know who are more liberal Catholics are all in for the Democrats anyway. And so they have a way of justifying or rationalizing, okay, well, this one thing happened. Well, that's an isolated incident. And they're probably against the thing within Catholicism that, you know, like take the abortion stuff. If there are Catholics who are pro-abortion or pro-LGB, whatever, you know, they already think that Catholicism is on the wrong side of history with those things anyway. And so I don't think it's gonna sway, because I think you're either...
You're there.
You're already there.
Yeah, nothing's moving.
Nothing's going to move.
Yeah. I saved this article for you because you are Catholic. This actually comes from AMAC, which is something like American something Association of Catholics.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. Last one. Title IX overhaul and the left's gender ideology crusade. Do you think that plays into the 2024 election?
I think it does, because they've pushed it too far. And I think, oddly enough, Bill Maher talks about this a lot lately, especially how he considers himself a traditional liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And he even acknowledges that they've gone too far, because now you're going to take people who would have been interested in having a conversation. They're just like, no, now you've gone too far. Talking about kids, you blew it. Talking about pushing these things down everybody's throat, it's too much. I think that, more than anything else on that list, will actually change people's votes.
Yeah, economy would be number one to me, and then polling suggests that immigration is way up there too.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm a little surprised that that's always I get that it's a huge issue. I'm surprised it always polls so high as something that people are voting on. But yeah, gender ideology is a big one, because it really speaks to the core of who you are, what you believe,
mm-hmm.
much more than just politics. And that's where I think you do see a lot of, and I hate referring to minorities as voting blocks, because they're not, but when you poll, you know, certain, you know, skin colors and ideologies and things, you do see movement toward Republicans. And I think it's not just economic. I think it's these social issues that they're finally saying, look, enough is enough. I can't vote just because you're calling me Latinx. Like, mm-hmm. you're not being more inclusive to me. I don't even do that. So what you're showing to me is that you don't understand me. Like, these social issues matter tremendously as far as basic ideology on life, much more than even politics.
What I think is happening, and we'll see if this plays out, but people are less moving toward Republican or even conservative, is that they see a need to create a new center.
Mm-hmm.
Because the left has shifted so far left, there's a big gap now where the center used to be, and people aren't ready to go full, and I don't blame them. You know, I almost cringe calling myself a Republican these days, but I think they are moving more conservative.
Mm-hmm.
From the standpoint of, this is too far.
Or at least they're saying, I'm staying here.
Yeah.
I'm not moving. I see the direction you're going. I'm not going with you.
Yeah, right.
James Carville, you mentioned Bill Maher. James Carville was the one I was going to quote on our way out of this segment, that he says the same thing about these gender things. He's like, look, Democrats, why? Like, why are you making this so central? And it's because it's not traditional Democrats that are making it central. It's the way progressives that are doing it. But the center Democrats have let the progressives run the party.
Yeah.
And so they kind of just have to go, well, that's where you're headed. I guess that's where we're going.
Right.
And they're just not doing anything about it. So, yeah, I think that's a pretty good list.
Get more at 971talk.com.